Making a recipe that calls for butter? Make it better with European butter from France. With a minimum of 82% butter fat, it's no wonder French butter is the number one choice of chefs the world over. Whether you're whipping up an omelet, sauteing vegetables, or spreading it on toast, the rich, cultured flavor of butter from France always elevates. Be sure to look for Made in France on the label. And for recipes, tips, and tricks, go to tasteeurope.com.
At first, everything was done on my iPhone, so that was done for 2 years, and I didn't even have a tripod. I was using a bottle of wine and a can of cat food as my tripod just to plot it up, and I bring that to everywhere I go. But then after 2 years, I finally got some camera gear.
This is Taste. I'm your host, Matt Rodbard. Today on the show, we have conversations with two exciting spring cookbook authors. First up is Tiffy Chen, the creator behind the popular Tiffy Cooks platform and the author of a great new book, Tiffy Cooks, 88 Easy Asian Recipes from My Family to Yours. Also on the show, we catch up with Toriano Gordon, the Bay Area chef and rapper behind the popular food truck Vegan Mob. We catch up about his great new cookbook, Vegan Mob, Vegan Barbecue and Soul Food. These are such great talks, and I hope you enjoy the conversations. Tiffy Chen, welcome to This Is Taste. How are you?
I am good. Thanks for having me today. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. Today is the birthday of your book. Happy yes. Pub Day.
Yes, today is the day. After 3 years, it is officially the day.
I mean, okay, so there's a day of first. Your first podcast, but we've already, like, this is not your last and your natural. But you did national television this morning for the first time.
Yes, ABC Good Morning America.
Wow.
The first one.
Heard of it.
It was amazing. I was so nervous, but it was such a great experience, and it's a great way to celebrate Pub Day, so it was perfect.
Oh my God, I'm sure all of your fans will get to your rise from TikTok and YouTube to this amazing cookbook, which I really like. I've spent some time with it, and it's just such smart recipe writing. What recipe did you do on TV today?
I did my grandma's stir-fry noodle recipe, and there's actually a watching party in Taiwan when I went live. Aww. So they were watching it live the same time in Taiwan, so it was super exciting.
Is that like in the evening?
It's 10 p.m., so everyone stayed up.
Cool.
Everyone actually had noodles ready, so it was my grandma's secret recipe.
I love it.
And we all watched it live. The host said hi to her, and it was great.
That is so cool. And you know what? I feel like having a support staff far away and a crew cheering you on made it like easier to do the segment.
Yes, it felt nice, like looking in the camera, knowing that there's also like family supporting on the other side. So it was unreal.
So you've been in New York a little bit. So what have you been eating while you're here?
Oh, every time I come to New York, there's just so many good food, and I always have a hard time choosing. But my go-to is always chicken and rice. I usually go to Halal Guys, but yesterday I tried Adele's Famous Food, and it was so good.
Oh yeah!
And I always get Los Tacos Number One.
Yeah,
it's a must grab. And then I'm always going to Chinatown.
Oh yeah!
You get Joe's Steamed Rice Rolls, which those are really good.
I love Joe's rice rolls. Let's go back to Los Taco. I think that is such a good call.
Yeah,
like a lot of people will kind of like talk smack about New York tacos are not as good as LA, whatever. Dude, Los Tacos is so good.
It is so good. The steak is so juicy.
Yeah.
Every single one is perfect. I don't think I can walk by without going in. That's how good the tacos are there.
I mean, yeah, I kind of am the same way. They're pastor as well. I like their carne asada. All right, so let's go back. September 3rd, 2020, you post your first TikTok. You're kind of anonymous at that point. I mean, you've probably been creating content. What happens after posting that one on that day, which, you know, pandemic had just kind of started? What's happening after you post that?
The next day I woke up, it had 200K plus views, and I could not believe it. I actually tried to be in the food space for the past 10 years. So I had two other failed YouTube channels, three failed food blogs. And this time I was like, I'll just try. I'll just post on TikTok. Who knows, on my phone. Woke up with 200K views. I was like, I can't believe this is real. So I decided to post every single day after that because I was like, maybe it's just, you know, one time thing only. The next video also got over 100K views. And since then, I started posting every single day for 5 months. After 5 months, I quit my corporate job, and here I am today.
That's so great. So I'm hearing a lot of things. First, you know, persistence. It definitely doesn't hit right away.
Yeah.
With anything on social media.
I would say like my favorite quote is like, it's definitely luck, but luck is what happens when opportunity meets preparation. And yeah. I think that the 10 years of me, like, I guess, failing really helped towards like the video that I posted. I think I was able to find my niche this time around, which is like easy Asian recipes.
Right. But in your own way. And I think I love the editing, and you've got such a style with the way you're cutting your videos. And it's not basic TikTok. It's really artfully done. And you're picking cool recipes, too.
Yeah, I like to make recipes that kind of inspire me to get cooking in the first place, which is things that you can find at the grocery store, but make it taste just as good as the ones that you get at restaurants or takeouts. And trying to make it with as little dishes as possible and as quick as possible. That's always my go-to.
Wait, so you quit your job 4 months later, 5 months later. So what's happening on that last day of work? I mean, are you just like walking out like, you know, mic drop moment?
I was really, really nervous. But what got me posting that one video was actually during the pandemic, I did a corporate cooking class to everyone in the company. And after that cooking class, I was like, I love cooking and I love sharing with people how to cook. So in a way, it felt like a full circle moment. My boss was definitely like, I didn't know signing you up for the cooking class was going to make you quit your job a few months later. But he was really happy for me. So it was great.
How do you get into how does the editing work? Like, are you filming for many hours and then cutting it down? Because I want to get a little behind the scenes look at your content.
Yeah. At first, everything was done on my iPhone. So that was done for 2 years. And I didn't even have a tripod. I was using a bottle of wine and a can of cat food as my tripod just to plot it up. And I bring that to everywhere I go. But then after 2 years, I finally got some camera gear. And now I also film some long form content. So it's kind of more so just behind the scenes of what I eat in the day. I like to bulk film maybe 2 to 3 recipes sometimes for short form.
Yeah.
And then take my time to edit it. But the recipe testing actually takes a long time. That takes usually around like 2 weeks or so. So shout out to my husband for trying out some of my dishes more than 3 to 4 times before it goes live.
Yeah, Dom's definitely a character in the content. I think it's really fun to see that. And really, you took your mom to Japan, right? Recently, I saw that video. That was cool.
Yeah, it was so nice bringing my parents to Japan. My family's a huge food lover. Mm-hmm. Food is definitely a love language in our family. So being able to experience different food and just places for the first time together, it was great. My mom was really motivated. She's like, I want to recreate this recipe when I get back.
I love that.
There's more recipes coming soon.
So speaking of travel, you and Dom, after graduating, went on a 4-month, 7-country, 20-city tour. Like, what does this do to you? I feel like we should talk about this kind of epic trip, because like some of our listeners may be thinking about doing that kind of trip. You know, obviously you have to plan financially, but clearly it paid off. It must have really affected you.
Yeah, it took me a while to decide to make that huge decision. As many other people, when they first graduate, they get scared about not having a job right after and taking some time off. And as a student, we had to plan a lot financially to go on the trip. But I really wanted to go to experience the world, especially Southeast Asia and Asia. One of my favorite places was Singapore. They have such amazing food there, the hawker stalls. And then Vietnam also had such great food. But just being able to go away, take some time off for ourselves before we kind of jump into the working schedule. Once you start working, it is really hard to take some time off.
I know,
it's
smart to do that at the end of graduation. So what are some of the highlights with this 7-country, 20-city tour? My goodness.
We took our time with the trip, so we didn't actually pre-book anything. So with Vietnam, we were planning to stay there originally for just a week and a half. We ended up staying for a whole month.
Wow.
They have such great food. We traveled from the south all the way to the north. And then we finished a trip off in Singapore. Mm-hmm. And the Hainan chicken there is like nothing I've ever had before. It's so tender. It's so simple. And I think that's the best part about street food in Asia, is that a lot of times these places only specialize in one dish, but they perfect it. It is so, so good.
It's the beauty of visiting Asia to have those like single topic restaurants everywhere.
Yes.
So great. All right. So let's actually talk a little bit about Taiwan. It's where your family's from. And I'd love to get a sense. I want to get how do we as Americans travel to Taiwan? I mean, do you fly into Taipei and hang there and then drive around? What is your rec, Tiff?
I would say if it's your first time, for sure go visit Taipei. There's so much to do in Taipei in general, whether it's night markets, visiting 101, trying Ding Tai Fung, unlimited bubble tea. They're everywhere you go.
Unlimited bubble tea.
Unlimited. You drink at least three a day. That's how many bubble teas.
That's why you can eat all day, because you're like powered by bubble tea.
Oh, yeah. It's always one hand bubble tea, one hand you get some sort of snack, fried chicken, anything. But Taiwan has really good food, so Taipei first. And then I would say after, you know, 3 to 4 days, travel down south. My favorite place is Tainan, which I would like to say it's where you get the best food in Taiwan. It's very homey dishes. A lot of dishes are influenced by different cultures from such as Spain and Japan. So you get to try a lot of different flavor profiles there. So it's unreal. And the thing about Taiwan, there's two things that we're famous for. One is the food, but the second, the people are so friendly.
Yeah,
and they really care about whether or not you have eaten and if you're full. So if you go to a restaurant, the first thing they say is like, have you eaten yet?
Yeah, right.
And they'll keep feeding you.
So let me ask you then, if you're in Taiwan and you're kind of, can you just like drive around, like you rent a car and you like hit the towns? Is that kind of the way to go?
In Taipei, it is so convenient. It's kind of like New York.
Yeah.
So they have a great MRT system, so you can walk and kind of train everywhere. The other parts of Taiwan, you train down and you can either ride a scooter if you're brave, and that's what you would recommend.
Totally into that.
That's a great way because it's so busy, and Taiwan's like a pretty small island too. So we usually ride around the scooter, so you can like park right in front of the restaurant, grab your food, hop back on, drive around. But you can also drive. There's a lot of scooters there though, so it might be a little bit intimidating.
Yeah, so scooter. Would you ever live there?
Yes, I would like to live there in the future if I can, like maybe 6 months here, six months in Taiwan.
Oh, the split time.
Yes, Taiwan gets really hot in the summer, up to like 40 degrees. So I think winter would be where I would want to be in Taiwan to do all the beef noodle soup and all the soupy dishes.
So let's head back to Vancouver where you live now, which is not a bad city on itself. I mean, I've never been to Vancouver, but I've heard everyone's like the Chinese food there is the best in the world outside of, you know, China and Taiwan. Is that accurate?
I think so. I've tried so many different places, and I would say Vancouver, we're very lucky. We have really, really, really good Asian food, specifically Chinese food. You get really good dim sum. We have really good Sichuan pepper dishes. We have really good hot pots, Chinese skewers. There's a town called Richmond in BC, and that place has unreal Asian food. You feel like you're in Asia when you walk in.
Yeah, I really want to go to Richmond. I mean, you're inspiring me to travel to Vancouver. I mean, how do I travel to Vancouver? Like, is it like a weekend? Do I have to be a week? How do you recommend it?
I would say a week. Vancouver, there's so much to see and do. It's beautiful. So you probably want to go up to Whistler. You want to travel around.
Yeah.
But just Richmond alone, if you want to do like a foodie tour in Richmond, that'll probably take you like 2 to 3 days.
Yeah.
And there's so many different options. Let me know when you come. And
I'll
bring you around.
Actually, I'm going to take you up on that offer,
yes.
Tiffy, because I really like to see some of the spots in Richmond. I've heard it's best. Is it just like there's a diaspora there? And is that just like the community is really keeps it traditional? Is that why the food is so good?
Yeah, and it has like a high population of Chinese immigrants, and then they're bringing like a lot of really authentic dishes there, and it's great. So people say they really do feel like home. I bring my grandparents that there sometimes. They're like, we don't have to speak English. It's great. Everything's so authentic.
Oh, I love it.
You can order everything off the menu.
Yeah. Sounds like New York a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a little bit about the book, because I feel like 88 recipes, symbolic number, as we know, it really has a flow to it. What's the goal for your readers with the book?
So for the book, I had so many different recipes ideas. We had 200 and I cut it down to 88.
Smart.
Just trying to figure out like which ones I really want to have in there. So we decided to split it into four different sections. So we have the first section, which is like easy Asian recipes. And these are recipes that like I kind of developed myself throughout the years, and they're like super easy. They're kind of my go-to. You use whatever you have in the kitchen already to put something together. But I also really wanted a section, which is our second section, called family style dining, where it reminded me of like a menu. If you go look through the book, you kind of pick out different dishes if you want to like serve it for friends and family.
Yeah.
And then we have a make in bulk session, which the section is really, really a lot of my grandma and my mom's recipes. So it's baos, dumplings, wontons, things that you can make in
freeze.
Bulk. Yes,
yeah.
Freeze it. So then you have easy breakfast or lunch throughout the week. And last but not least, it was drinks and desserts, because you can't have a Taiwanese cookbook without bubble tea, what we're most known for in our fruit teas and our yummy desserts. So we also have a dessert section at the really end. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, if you get the book and then you don't really know how to cook, you're able to flip through the pages and find something that you love, whether it's a quick 20-minute recipe or it's something that you want to impress your friends and family or date night.
I love the organization. You've kept it very simple, and each section is pretty fun. And let me ask you about a couple recipes. You've called your chicken chow mein the ultimate. Okay, that's like fighting words. So what makes yours the ultimate chicken chow mein?
I had so many chow mein recipes my whole life.
Yeah.
It's my go-to. I don't think I can not order chow mein if I see it on the menu. So I would say that definitely helped. But another thing is that I made it so often as a student because chow mein is so customizable.
Yeah.
It has all your protein, your carbs, and your chicken in there. And then you stir it all together. It's affordable. It's filling. So I had so many that I had to perfect the sauce in order to make it perfect every time. So this sauce, I would like to say it's like an ultimate sauce. It is so good. Even though it's a chicken chow mein recipe, if you're making it at home with shrimp or if you want to make it vegetarian without chicken, it will still taste just as good.
Right on.
That's the reason.
Take us through the sauce. What's going on in there?
So I like to say it has a perfect balance of savory, tangy, a little bit of sweetness. And people always ask me, like, why do you add sugar in your recipe? And that's because sugar really helps balance out the saltiness of the soy sauce. And it really helps complement the whole dish together. And I find a lot of recipes are actually missing the tang. And that's when the black vinegar comes in. Gives it a nice tang, which pairs really well with celery. So it's like a savory note. So it's like every bite you get so much flavor and they all balance perfectly together.
I love the use of celery. I mean, you got to be careful with it because
yes.
it can be pretty bland
or
unappealing. But if you put black vinegar and celery, wow.
It's like the perfect combo.
All right. Well, there's a few other dishes, but one 3-cup chicken comes to mind. What is 3-cup chicken to you?
So in Taiwan, you have these places called like Stir Fry 99. So they're $99 a plate, Taiwan dollars. And then you can order whatever you like. And the most famous thing there is the 3-cup chicken. It is, I like to call it like Kai Wei Cai in Mandarin. But it basically means a very appetizing dish that once you eat it, you would want bowls and bowls and bowls of rice. Mm. The sauce is just so good. And it's called 3-cup chicken because it's 3 cups of, it's equal servings of soy sauce, sesame oil, as well as Chinese cooking wine.
Yeah.
And then people, those three flavors complement each other really well, especially with chicken. So I customized the recipe to kind of adjust the ratio a little bit to make it a little bit more easier to make at home and something that you can make at home even without a huge wok.
Yeah.
So we played around with the recipe, but it's so good. And you can, that sauce on top of rice, you'll at least eat
it's a lot of sauce. So you're boiling the chicken to start and then you're adding the sauce. Is that how that goes?
You pan fry the chicken.
Pan fry the chicken, okay.
And then that way you could get some flavor on the chicken. You get the oil from the chicken skin. You also then add in ginger and garlic to kind of add fragrance. And then you pour in the sauce and let the chicken cook down in the sauce. So the sauce gets like the flavor from the chicken oil.
Yeah.
It also gets like the garlic and the ginger and then finish off with Taiwanese Thai basil. Just to complement the whole thing together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. I was thinking of Hainanese when I said boil, but this makes sense all in the wok.
Yes.
How many woks do you have?
I have 3.
Yeah.
The thing with wok is I find that the longer you use it, the better it gets. So once
Preach.
Mine
is so old. I love it. It's so old. Yeah. And so stained up. I love it.
Yes. And once you find that one, it's hard not to travel with it. So I have basically 3 woks, but 2 of them are the same brand. And I just use it everywhere. Even if I travel, I'll bring it with me.
I love it. What's your setup like in your kitchen at home? Do you have like gas?
I have gas. I find that gas cooks a lot quicker.
Yeah.
But then when we're making the recipe for the cookbook, my mom actually has induction.
Oh, yeah.
So then we were testing it in both, just so that way we can make sure that, you know, you don't need gas to cook everything.
I think that's smart for a cookbook author to test them both.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't all have the gas range.
Yes.
So it sounds like maybe book 2 might be in the works. What are we thinking right now? I mean, it's like literally day 1 of book 1. So I'm sorry to ask you this, but we were talking off mic a little. It sounds like you're probably going to be working on a book 2.
Yes, I did the book. I took the book back for my grandma. We're flipping through it. And she was like, man, I want to add this recipe in it. This one. So she already has a bunch of recipes. I have a few recipes in my mind too. So I'm excited. Hopefully a book 2 to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll keep it very vague. But I'm sure, you know, we'll have you back in the studio at some point. All right. On This Is Taste, we ask guests about their discerning taste. So to close this interview, here's a little rapid-fire Fast and Furious taste check. Are you ready?
Yes.
The best fruit?
Watermelon.
Okay. Let me ask you, how do you cook with watermelon?
I don't. I think I like it so much, it doesn't even go into any dishes.
It doesn't go into dishes. You just eat it.
I can't help it. Yeah. Eat it right away.
Respect that. The worst vegetable?
Eggplant.
Fully agree.
Yeah.
So hard to cook with.
It's so hard. I have an eggplant recipe in the cookbook. So if I think it's good, that means it's really good because I do not like eggplant.
You do not like it. Yeah. I mean, eggplant parm, though, I got to say.
Yeah.
I'm not hating on that. The best dessert?
Pudding.
What kind?
I like Japanese pudding a lot.
Ah, right.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, like from the Japanese like convenience store.
Yeah. And I think about Cooking Mama every time I have it too. It's my favorite level.
So good. All right. Your favorite cookbook of all time?
I like the Korean Vegan Cookbook.
Oh, a terrific book.
I love that. The storytelling in there, the photos are beautiful.
It's a great book. It's a great call. Do you have a favorite new cookbook discovery?
I've seen a little bit already, but it's coming next month. Is Scrappy Cooking by Plant You. I'm excited for that book.
Oh, yeah. I've seen some early pages from that book. That's cool. Your favorite city outside of Canada to visit for food?
Taiwan.
I mean, that makes sense. That's obvious. Yeah.
Tokyo.
Yeah. Oh, fair enough. That's a good one, too. Yeah. So, I mean, either are good. I'm not questioning your choices here. These are good choices. A cuisine you would like to learn more about?
Mexican food.
What draws you to that? Like, what are you thinking?
I would say that I love Mexican food to begin with. It's like one of my go-tos. We don't get as much delicious Mexican food in Canada compared to the US.
Yeah.
So whenever I come, that's all I want to eat. But I also find that it's so interesting how many similarities they have actually a little bit with Taiwanese cuisine.
Yeah.
When I do post recipes or when I launch my product with the scallion sauce and the golden shallot oil, everyone's like, I can make this also with like my Mexican food. And I was like, oh, I want to learn how to make it. And I love their food so much. It's packed with so much flavor. I love to learn how to work with the spices and everything.
I love that challenge.
Yeah.
I feel like that's definitely the next phase for you maybe is digging into Mexican cuisine.
Yes.
Have you ever made like salsa matcha?
I have, but I don't think mine compares anything close. So I want to like learn how to perfect it. Maybe I'll go down to Mexico and take some cooking classes and stuff.
I like that idea. That's like that instinct. The last one, your favorite sandwich?
Taiwanese breakfast sandwich.
What's in that?
It has cucumber, ham, egg. It takes 5 minutes to put together, but it's so good.
I'm thinking, what's the bread choice on that?
Milk bread, a fluffy milk bread.
I love the sandwich. And then the egg is very fluffy too.
Yes, perfect.
All perfect texture. I love that. Tiffy Chen, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining This Is Taste.
Thank you so much for having me.
Toriana Gordon, welcome to This Is Taste. How are you doing?
I'm good. How you doing this morning, Matt?
Oh, it's a good morning. And we're going to talk about Vegan Mob, the new cookbook that you just released. I love it. Well, we'll get into the details. I love that your concept is plant-based. And I think plant-based is something that can come in many different forms. But for you, you're really making the food seem irresistible at the jump, just the way that the dishes read in the cookbook, but also at your food truck. Tell me, how do you define your plant-based cooking at Vegan Mob?
Real soul, just authentic. Like, I don't think anything matches it. And the reason why I say that, I don't say it in an arrogant way, but I say it because it's really a mixture of who I am, where I come from, and what raised me. And meaning that is my grandmother came from the South, from Houston. Moved to San Francisco. My other grandfather on my father's side, which is the father that raised me, not my biological, but the one who raised me, was French Moroccan, had a French restaurant. And then I grew up on a bunch of like Asian cuisine and just different type of foods in San Francisco. So I kind of just blended it all in there and just put things that I really liked and that I grew up on. And that's why I say it's unmatched, because it's me and it's not anyone else, you know? And so it's just really, really, just really like explains who I am and what I love, you know, and that's what the book's about. It's all about history, like food. I believe food is history. And it's just that I made it in plant-based form, because I didn't grow up on plant-based food, but I decided to change my lifestyle, and that's how that came about.
And the way you use meat substitutes is super smart. There's some plant-based cooking where it's, you know, no meat substitutes, but you like to use them and refer to brands. So I want to hear about that and maybe some favorite products you cook with, because I like that point of view a lot.
So some products I use are Better Chew, which is a local vendor out of Vallejo. He's really from DC, but he moved to Vallejo and created this product out here in the Bay Area. And I use a lot of Impossible for like my burgers and for my spaghetti sauce and things like that. And I like Impossible because it just has a real beefy taste. And it does something well to the recipes. And Better Chew, I use him for my brisket. He makes a steak and I smoke that brisket and I season it like brisket, put a rub on it. And I use his fried chicken and I batter it up, you know, with my seasonings, just like I would if I was just making chicken, like what I used to make chicken. And so, I really like bee leaf shrimp as well. Bee leaf shrimp, they have a good type of pea protein, potato starch shrimp that just has a real nice texture to it. And I match it up with my batter and it's amazing, you know? So those are like my top three.
I saw that. And, you know, for a po' boy or for anything else, I feel like you definitely have this shrimp product that seems to be really excellent.
Oh yeah, man. It goes back to how I created these recipes. It's like my favorite vegan restaurants, I will say after mine and before mine, before I started Vegan Mob, were the Asian vegan restaurants. And one of my favorite things on their menu was the shrimp. And so I sourced that shrimp because it tastes like shrimp. And it just really like was like, oh my God, it's like shrimp without the super seafood taste, just wonderful textures. And then I figured it out and I was like, I'm gonna add my own, you know, Southern, you know, California flavor to it. And that's how that came about. So I just really like took some of my favorites and figured it like that's just really how Vegan Mob, what explains Vegan Mob really.
I mean, it's so well said about Chinese and Asian vegan restaurants. I grew up going to a spot in Philly called Kingdom of Vegetarians that was so good with the vegan shrimp. And Zen Palette in New York in the 90s. I just love that you are channeling these meat substitutes.
Oh, man, thank you. I mean, they're the originators of the vegan, vegetarian, cuisine, I think, from you know, before it got popular, before everybody started to eat it, these places were the ones that were doing it. And they cook it. The way they cook it is just like just any Chinese food, you know, any Vietnamese food, like, you know, because I just started to be vegan in 2018. And so I know what the food tastes like. And I was, that's what turned me vegan. I was like, okay, I can eat this food. I told my wife, I was like, well, we can be vegan. Like this food right here is great. And so it actually helped me become vegan because some of my favorite cuisine is Asian food and they just did it like they weren't missing with the flavors and the textures.
Before you went vegan, did you have a restaurant business and were you a working chef using non-plant-based products?
Not at all. So my grandfather owned a restaurant when I was a kid. I grew up in the restaurant, but I always wanted to be like, I'm a rapper, and food and rap, are my passions. And so I always loved to cook. Like I went to a culinary academy out here, the Le Cordon Bleu. And I didn't graduate not because I wasn't handling my business, but because I just was at a part of my life where things were not in order. And so I wasn't able to graduate. I didn't finish the school, but I always wanted to be a chef. And in that school, It was crazy. I was going to all these special extracurriculum, extra credit, you know, classes after school. And I remember one of the guys are like, the chefs. And he said, everybody wants to be a celebrity chef. He said, but it's highly unlikely. And I was in the back of that class and I was like, well, I don't know what he's talking about. but I tried to work at restaurants, and I was talking about this last night. And I was like, honestly, when I worked at these restaurants, I was like, this ain't for me. I was like, I don't think this is for me. And then I ended up opening my own restaurant. Like, I was like, oh, man, this is, 'cause I love to cook. But at that time, like being a sous chef, they kicked me to dishwasher because I wasn't seasoned in a professional kitchen, you know? And so when I just took it in as my passion and like just did what I did at home, that's when things started to take off for me.
It's so cool that you say that. And I think it's such a well said point. I mean, you know, some people are built to be famous, some people aren't, and you clearly are built. And have you linked up with Bun B at all? Down in Houston, he's got his takeout place, which I think is amazing. By the way, I visited. I don't know. What's the thing about rap and restaurants that work so well?
Man, it's crazy because Bun B is one of my favorite artists, and I got to link up with Bun. Trio Burgers. I mean, I seen that, and I was like, whoa, like, I feel
so
like
good.
I don't know if he saw me because I'm not as, you know, he's a whole nother legend. You know what I mean? And I'm trying to get there, right? I don't know if he saw me or not, but I feel like, you know, I'm one of the guys that kicked it off in the hip hop game. 'Cause I started in 2019, and I feel like I don't know what it, I think it's art. You know, we just love it's art. I always, you know, when I went to, they call it culinary arts, and they always like referred to it as a different type of art, right? But I always put it in the same category as an artist. Like I'm an artist. I do music. I graffiti. I tagged and did graffiti when I was a kid. I'm hip hop. Like I feel like cooking is a part of expressing yourself. And artists, like rap artists, one thing that we like to do, if you listen to music, and especially in the time period I came up in, is what do rappers like to do? Brag, right? And so I feel like food and cooking is a form of bragging too, like and impressing, like and showboating, like you wanna brag and impress. Like I got my wife by cooking, you know, when she saw my food, her mouth dropped. And that's how I got my wife. And I always used to like cook.
That's really, really, really fun.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about a signature from the cookbook. Is there a signature recipe that you feel is like your signature?
The gumbo. The gumbo. Definitely the gumbo. The gumbo, the macaroni. And definitely the mob sauce. The mob sauce. Yeah.
So let's talk about Korsha Wilson. I'm a huge fan of Korsha. I know her. She's written for Taste, and I think she's such a fine writer. And you guys collaborated on this book. I'd like to hear a little bit about that collaboration.
Korsha, not only just a great writer and a great person to work with, she was like a real partner. Like she kept me on my toes, you know. She went above and beyond. I don't think she had to do what she did. Like she was almost like an assistant in a way to like, she was like, Toriano, you this time, and then we need to meet this time. And then, you know, just really, really, because I was really busy with the restaurant and I just started Vegan Mob. And so like, related to every, even though what I was afraid of is that she is from the East Coast, right? And the cultural differences as far as like the regions, I didn't think would match all the way, right? That's where I will not match all the way, but I feel like that was going to be a little bit of a challenge, right? But she just, we just connected. Like, we just matched and everything was awesome. She understood me. She didn't have to try hard. And it was just, I couldn't choose another person, honestly. And she has a good taste for a tongue. So when she tasted my recipes and she told me what was going on, I trusted her.
Well said. I appreciate the tribute to Korsha. I think she's just such a terrific writer. And we sometimes don't talk about collaborators on the show. And I'm glad you gave her the tribute she deserves. And I got to ask you, outside of your restaurant, I'd love to hear your take on the Bay Area right now. Are there any restaurant or chefs that you just love and you want to shout a little bit?
Oh, yeah. You know, a restaurant that I love that I just went to, I just took people to Nature Vegetarian. That's a Chinese vegan restaurant. But I want to shout out, Chef Smelly. You know, he's not a vegan restaurant, and I eat vegan, so obviously don't go to his restaurant, but his food looks amazing. Everybody talks about him. It's my brother. It's much love. You know, I want to give a shout out to Cooking in Style. He's like a out the truck chef. You know, he's not in a restaurant or anything. He's selling plates. Another chef, Chef Green, Keith Lee just came out here and went to go see Chef Green and highlighted him. Smoking Woods, another barbecue restaurant. I haven't eaten the food, but it looks amazing. He's a great guy. Everybody loves this spot. These people inspire me too, you know, because I'm inspired by more of non-vegan stuff. And then I go ahead and say, hey, I'm gonna turn this vegan, you know? What else do we got? There's somebody else that I know is somebody I'm missing. I want to definitely give love. I want to shout out Chef Chu, because Chef Chu definitely gave me some game growing up. I mean, not growing up, but growing up in this game. Like when I first started, he had been in the vegan game. He had been in the restaurant game. He gave me my proteins. He helped me with funding. He got me into the farmers markets. He did a lot. And I got to give a shout out to Evan Cadera from Senior Seasick. He's the one who got me into the building. I grew up with him. He gave me a lot of game. And he's a popular restaurant. He's actually a Filipino fusion restaurant. And so those are some of the names. If I forgot anybody, man, it's my bad. But I got love for all of y'all. But really,
you shouted out a lot of people there.
Well, because that's how I am. I got love for everybody, you know, and Bay Area culture, like, it's out the trunk. It's hustle, you know, and I feel like the food game kind of like out here kind of mirrors that. That's why the food and the rap game is so.
Yep.
And let's give a shout out to E-42. Forget it. The goon with a spoon, man. He got his cookbook out, too. Shout out 40. <Yeah. laughs> Lumpia Chef, too. All right, I'm done.
good shouts. It's like the end of an album. You got to give all the credit.
Right. But I got love for all of those people, man. They out here grinding, and they making us look good out here.
Toriano, on This Is Taste, we ask guests about their discerning taste. So to close this interview, here's a little rapid-fire Fast and Furious taste check. Are you ready?
Let's go.
The best fruit.
The best fruit. Mango.
The worst vegetable.
Let's go with turnips.
It's come up a lot. Poor turnips taking L's left and right. The best dessert.
The best dessert. Cheesecake.
A cuisine you would like to learn more about.
Indian.
Last one, your favorite sandwich.
My favorite sandwich is a turkey sandwich. And I can't get that right now, but I love turkey sandwiches on Dutch Crutch. Do they got Dutch Crutch out there?
I don't think so. I don't know the brand, but I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, Dutch Crutch is a Bay Area thing, actually. Somebody from, I think, Dutch came to California and they made this bread out here when they came to like San Francisco. Shout out to Ike Sandwiches. I don't think he's on the East Coast yet, but he will be. He's a chain. He's doing amazing things, and he got good sandwiches going on.
Toriana Gordon, thank you so much for joining. This is Taste. It's been a lot of fun.
Right on, Matt. I appreciate you. Thanks for having me. This has been fun, too. I love it. Have me again, man. I would love to come back on.
Liza, what's up? How are you?
I'm good. We're in our new studio.
How do you feel? We've just started. I think we're week three here. It feels kind of like home.
Yeah, I think the new studio is like if we were going to do three things, which we're about to do, it would be my bonus fourth thing.
The fourth thing would be like, we actually have padded chairs instead of chairs that give us arthritis.
Yeah. And like that we're not in front of a kitchen where people are talking about what they want to have for lunch in the background.
Listener, in December, we recorded a series of podcasts during a holiday party that the audio department, which we share a floor with, they were doing like a 2 p.m. like wine o'clock hour. It was getting loud.
Oh, I mean, they had their absolute right, and we've made it through, and now we are in our whole new studio.
Yeah, speaking of festive, we're going to talk about three festive things. What's your first festive thing?
My first thing is this salad that I've been making every weekend that I just wanted to tell you and other people about.
Yeah.
It's kind of a riff on a niçoise salad, except for it doesn't have eggs because I don't like eggs. But I do like really beautiful blanched green beans, big fat chunks of avocado, big pieces, not little ones, and like flaked smoked trout or sardine, some kind of fish, and then like a really mustardy, acidic dressing. It's really good. I've been making it a lot for a brunch sort of meal.
Yeah.
And I feel like going into springtime, like I don't have really good spring produce yet, so you got to do something to transform the green beans a little bit with the blanch, but I feel like it's that kind of green, fresh taste that's getting me excited for when other things do arrive at the market.
It's like the bridge season salad.
Yes, that's a great way to call it.
I like it. And I like that you're getting your omegas, hardcore, yeah, with the avocado and the tinned fish.
Yeah, and also all the olive oil.
Olive oil,
that
too.
That salad dressing.
Sounds amazing. I'm really inspired. How do you blanch? Is it just like shock or two minutes boil and shock or even less?
Yeah, I kind of am going off of eye, I would say, and then maybe plucking out a green bean and nibbling on
it.
I want it to be sweeter and have still some structural integrity, not so floppy. I do love like a hard cooked green bean, but these they're like an al dente green bean.
Totally. Great call. And I like that you're making a lot of other choices and adding more texture and actually foundation. So it's not just the beans. You've got like this great like trout or smoked salmon or whatever. And then you've got, of course, the avo. Mm.
Yeah, that's my first thing. What's
so
yours?
So good. On the opposite end of eating in a more balanced and healthful way, I went to Hamburger America last night, and I got to try the first of many signature monthly burger drops. It's like the kith. It's like this. It's like the supreme of hamburgers. They're doing these limited edition drops.
Okay, I like this. Is it like seasonal produce or a collab? What makes it a drop?
Seasonal produce in the Hamburger America world doesn't really... No, it's fun. It's a good question.
I don't know. It could be like, I don't know, ramps into cheeseburgers.
No, it's cool. It's actually more in the style of George Motes, who runs the place. It's more about the history of American hamburgering or hamburger culture. And so each month he's inviting a classic stand from America. He flies them in and they're doing burgers.
That's so cool.
It's real cool. So he had Glenn Fieber from Solly's Grill in Glendale, which is a neighborhood of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He was in there yesterday and the day before, and he was doing classic Wisconsin butter burgers.
Okay, tell me more, because I've never had one before.
So butter burgers are kind of an institution in Wisconsin. And I grew up in Michigan. I never heard of them until I went to college in Wisconsin. Essentially, it speaks for itself. It's basically a flat-top burger, bun. Glenn does his with not caramelized onions, but cooked onions. And then a really healthy slathering of butter. And Glenn brought in Wisconsin butter for it. I've had, you know, Culver's is a pretty famous chain that is known for a butter burger. But when you have it, you're kind of just getting a buttered bun and getting like, you know, maybe a little butter on the patty. They're putting like literally a quarter inch of butter across the bun. And the guy sitting next to me, he was a nice guy. He was like looking at me. He's like, "Are you really going to eat that?"
You can't just ask somebody that. You're in a restaurant. Of course you're going to eat
that. He was implying that. I shouldn't slander the man. He didn't say that, but his face said that.
You felt the vibe.
I felt the vibe, and really we were all having a great time. It was nice hanging out with George. In a future month, he's going to be having the Green Olive Burger from Michigan there, and we will report back on that.
Okay, let's go. I want to try it.
What is your second thing?
My second thing is I have been on this quest to get a good chopped cheese lately that has been repeatedly foiled by the universe. I don't know if it's because Mercury is in retrograde or what, but twice I've gone to Farmer in the Deli, which is a very well-respected chopped cheese deli by where I live, and they have not been doing chopped cheeses. The first was at like an hour, I won't say. Late at night.
Late.
And I
in
thought,
the twos? In the ones?
3:30.
Oh, wow.
And they weren't doing chopped cheeses. And I just left the whole deli because I couldn't deal with the stress of thinking about what I wanted instead. And then I returned on the day of the solar eclipse to get my chopped cheese to watch the eclipse with. And they also were not doing chopped cheeses. I think they are like the whole hot area is out of commission for another week. So I basically have to go back. But what I got instead was they do a chopped cold cut sandwich with basically all of the deli cold cuts.
Love it.
Chopped up. I've never had anything quite like it before. And it was just like a very strange and fun sandwich to have while watching the eclipse.
I loved it. I saw some photos from the eclipse, and a lot of folks here were eating lots of different picnic lunches during the eclipse. It was a great time to do that.
Yeah, it was very sweet. I live close to Fort Greene Park, so I just
popped
over to watch it there. Yeah, I staked out a spot and then just had all my neighborhood friends come by to watch the eclipse. And then they all left right after we reached peak totality, which I thought was crazy because the eclipse was a whole, you know, three-hour block of time.
And we were having a beautiful day in New York.
Yeah, I tried to, you know, you may have noticed I was not on Slack. I was charging my tarot cards by the sun and just sitting and vibing with my chopped sandwich.
It's so great. On the note of chopped cheese, if you're in Los Angeles, there's a place on Sunset on the east side called Bodega Park. And they're owned by a great Korean couple. And they do some really nice Korean sandwiches. They do like a Deji Kolbe sandwich, which with mayonnaise, it's amazing. But they do a chopped cheese there. So Los Angeles has a great chopped cheese place. And it's called Bodega Park.
Well, I love to hear it. And I'm going to return to Farmer in the Deli again another week, hopefully. And I will report back.
Step it up, guys.
What's your next one?
My next one is I have to give special recognition and shouts to New York Magazine's Who Ate Where package. It was their cover story. They do an annual throwback issue every year, and this year was all dedicated to restaurants of yesteryear, but done in such a great way. Did you get a chance to check out this package?
Yeah, this is one of my many open tabs on my computer. I've started reading it, but I haven't made it all the way through. But I love New York history and obviously New York dining, so it's such a fun combination.
It was so well done, and we're having Alan Sietsema, the editor, the food editor of New York Magazine, on the show soon to talk about it and other things, and I just can't wait to catch up with him. But really, what this package did was it went through the eras of New York. It was from around the early 19th century, like we'll say like 1890s, all the way into 2007. And honestly, so many names were covered and done in like the New York Magazine style, these like really brisk, voice-driven essays. And they covered restaurants like Florent, which is that legendary meatpacking district, All Night Cafe, that was an epicenter of queer life downtown in the 80s and 90s, to Maxwell's Plum, which I need to like find out more about. Maxwell's Plum was like a restaurant in the 70s that also had a lot of like orgies in there, which I think is like part of dining history. They have pieces on Ratner's, Max's Kansas City, Da Silvano. I mean, it's like a really great list of restaurants that I want to know more about.
I did not get to the Maxwell's Plum section, but I'm very curious about what they were serving at that establishment. I have an eBay alert set for this vintage cookbook that I really want for my collection, but it literally sells for $1,000. But the title is Cooking for Orgies and Other Large Parties, which I'm so obsessed with.
Wow.
Well, if you ever find it in a used bookstore, think of me.
I will. I mean, you got to get your Abe alert. Are you doing Abe or are you doing just eBay?
I should do that for Abe. It was very rarely printed in the 70s, and it seems to be a collector's item. So I'm hoping I have an alert set for like a slight misspelling of the title in hopes that like someone else will not do that. Anyways.
eBay sniper actions there. I love that. What's your last one?
My last one is that I went to Mala Project recently and had their hot and sour soup, which I had never had before. And it was maybe my favorite hot and sour soup that I've ever had. It was so wonderful. It had like a lot of the mala spices in it and like really chewy noodles. And it just was like the perfect, still kind of cold weather in New York soup. So I wanted to give it some love.
You know, I love a mala soup. And Mala Project is a place I haven't been to in a couple of years. It's a great reminder.
They just opened a second location in Greenpoint.
Oh, cool.
Which actually, I was at the original in the East Village.
East Village,
but
yeah.
The Greenpoint location looks quite beautiful. It's up by McCarran Park.
And, you know, hot pot, you know, you can have it in the summer. That's the thing. I think people think of it as only a winter dish.
Mm.
You can have it in the summer. It'll cool you down.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like a lot of people ascribe to the eating hot things when it's hot out to cool down.
Absolutely.
School. What's your last thing?
Special shout out to you and your colleague, Tanya Bush. Happy 2 years to Cake Scene. I have to acknowledge it. I went last night to your reading, and you had Nikolai Rips there, Lexi Smith, Adam Dalva, many others gave these beautiful readings, and just the work you and Tanya are doing, when you just hear it, I've read all of the issues, and I have them at home on my... I sometimes will pop in here and there when I'm like having coffee at my coffee table. But to hear them read by the authors, it was special.
Yeah, it was really special for me too because, you know, I spend so much time in the Google Docs or on the print files because we're a print magazine working with these stories. But to hear them read aloud, especially the poetry, I thought really like takes on a whole other life when it's read aloud. Or Ali Dumrungchai's story, The True Life of a Cookie Cam Girl.
Love that one.
About eating cookies on camera on like sex chat sites was just so funny. And just getting to watch the audience engage in that way was special.
Yeah, she was terrific. I think there was like everybody who read, I think there was some poetry that was really powerful. Would you give a shout out to the poetry?
Oh, yeah, to Makaysha Tolbert.
Yeah.
Read a poem from Wicked Cake, which was our second issue about kind of the dark side of desserts, about Ursula Granger, who was an enslaved pastry cook and also ran many other aspects of the Thomas Jefferson family estate. And she wrote a poem about just the experience of her pastry program and literally having to get the key to open the door to where the sugar was being kept in the kitchen.
I know. And that moment was just powerful. And in hearing about how, you know, this dichotomy of pastry, but also being enslaved, I mean, it was extremely powerful, and I know it's part of a larger collection that she's working on, and I hope to read that one day. I really just such a fan of her work.
Yeah, I am as well, and they're actually doing a poetry anthology is going to be coming out,
cool.
I think, in the next year, so I'll keep everyone posted on that.
And let's talk about the pastries. Lauren Schofield, I'd seen her on Instagram. She did Andy Baragani's wedding, like shouts, but I got to try this amazing, you can describe it, it was like black forest with cherries, maybe. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. And I just really liked the way, Eliza, you and your crew executed pastry, and you were raising money, and I thought it was just a beautiful event.
Yeah, it was really fun to get to, we had recipes from the first four issues that had been cooked and were available for purchase at the event. And I had actually never tried Lauren's before because that was for the Wicked Cake issue as well. That's why it was a Hansel and Gretel theme on the Black Forest cake. We shot them all in an abandoned church that was really falling apart, and we were all masking the whole time to avoid the asbestos that I'm sure was everywhere. So we actually like, didn't get to eat any of the cakes from that shoot because it just didn't feel safe after they'd been hanging out in this abandoned church for so long. So last night was the first time I got to try that one also, and it was so good.
So good. Well, thanks for sharing your three things.
Yeah, thanks for talking with me, and thanks for coming to the party.
Sure. This is Taste is hosted by Eliza Abarbanel and me, Matt Rodbar. The show is produced by Shalia Harris and Pat Stango and edited by Clayton Gumbert. Theme music by Steve Rydell. Visit Taste online at tastecooking.com and make sure to subscribe to our newsletter for updates on all cool things that are happening.